So if you're a working parent, you'll have been following this one with much interest, I imagine. The Australian government and opposition have been trading blows over the economics of providing rebates for families who employ nannies. According to costings released by the government, done by the Education and Finance Departments, adding nannies to the childcare rebate would cost $2 billion over 4 years. And without any new money coming along, the government says that would have to mean cutting existing childcare benefits by 20% for over 650,000 families. That's the calculus anyway. But in the midst of the politics, economics and debate over the relative merits of nannies versus childcare, are there other options that policymakers should be considering? My guest today has first-hand experience of childcare options in both Europe and Southeast Asia, and Australia, she says, has a nanny problem. Emma Kate Simmons is a columnist with the Australian Financial Review. She's written an op-ed on what she sees as some possible solutions. She's based between Paris and Bangkok, lucky thing, and she joins me now from a home in Thailand. Welcome to ABC Radio National, Emma Kate.
Hi, Natasha. Thank you very much.
I'm a bit jealous of your life.
It can be tiring occasionally.
It sounds like it.
I'm not complaining.
A lot of commuting. Let's start by hearing about your personal experience. You were living in France when you had your son, Andre. What was the cultural expectation about women returning to work after a child? Because this is interesting.
Well, actually, Andre was born in Southeast Asia because we'd already moved actually into Manila at that point. Then we moved quickly to Bangkok. But when he was only a few months old, I went back to France where I'd met my husband. He's from Paris. And actually, the first thing that everyone said to me when Andre was, I think, about 5 months old, what are you doing still breastfeeding? That's a very French thing. They don't really understand if you continue to breastfeed exclusively. And Australia was very tired. So that was a separate question. Mm-hmm. But what I came across was women at my point who had a child who was about 5, 6, even 4 months old, had nearly all returned to work full-time. Now, full-time work in France is a bit more flexible than what I understand it to be in Australia in terms of hours, especially when you return after having had a baby. Mm. But the expectation is you go back to work, and then you have quite a lot of choice in terms of whether you put your child into what we call long daycare in Australia. There's different kinds of creches run by councils, ones that are run by parents with state assistance. And then there's nannies, nannies will attract a generous tax credit of 50% if they're approved through the system. So you actually have quite a lot of choice.
That's a very different situation to Australia. Choice is key there.
Yeah, I mean, I really think it's important. I mean, you're not forced back into the workforce either. In fact, I'm sure John Howard, in fact, he liked a lot the French system, and in the 1980s he used to talk about income splitting. So basically your tax bill reduces according to the number of children you have. But basically, yes, you can decide if you stay at home, you'll receive a lot of assistance. But if you go back to work, and most women do, it's got one of the highest rates of full-time work for women with children in the world. It's above 75%.
I wonder if they want to go back to work or whether there's just a long-held cultural expectation that they will, in a sense, almost a peer pressure.
Well, I don't know. That was my question too, and I've spoken at length with some of my friends and colleagues on this subject. Some of them say that, yes, perhaps they would prefer a couple of months more. But what they do in that case, because you are actually required to go back to work when the baby's about 3 months old, is they'll keep a few holidays. If they're in very highly paid jobs, they can negotiate with their employer. But yes, the cultural expectation is you'll return to work full time. And then most of them will say by the time the baby's 6 or 7 months old, they're quite happy with that.
So what did you decide to do, Emma Kate? Did you get a nanny or did you go for childcare?
Well, I mean, obviously I'm in a slightly different situation, so I can be critiqued on this level because as a freelance journalist, I've got inbuilt flexibility, if not the same kind of security that people have who go into an office every day at the same time. But when I arrived in France, for example, during the riots in Thailand in 2010, when my son was only about one, I was in France for 3 months. So I hired a nanny for a month. Now, I couldn't go through their system, but even hiring a nanny who is a French citizen but was a Portuguese immigrant and paying her casually, it was absolutely reasonable in terms of cost. And now, recently, we're also in France. My husband had to have a couple of non-threatening medical interventions, but because there was a medical thing involved, and he's French, we were allowed to put our son into their occasional care centre called the Garderie, which is in every neighbourhood next to a school usually, and our son was there every day in the morning and afternoon. It's structured play, and he loved it. And it's really thought out with professionals working there, and it wasn't expensive at all. I mean, really, I think over a month in Australian dollars, it was about $400 or $500, and he was really there every day.
Which is what some people are paying, well, more than this, for a week for a nanny or for childcare.
This is true. And look, Australia has, you have much higher salaries than in France at the moment, but even if you factor all that in, the cost is high in Australia, and I really sympathise with my friends who are having to factor that in. And at least they're having children in Australia, because before they weren't, now there's a bit of a baby boom, but you wonder how long that's going to last if we don't intervene in Australia to think on a more global level about childcare.
It seems almost unfashionable to raise this issue, but does that mean there's an underclass of underpaid nannies in France? Mainly immigrant women who might find it hard to make an income otherwise. And I guess also in parallel with that, how qualified are they? Because that's part of the discussion in the public context, isn't it? What sort of training are we anticipating if we did make nannies more widespread and more accessible?
Well, there certainly is. There is a small underclass of nannies in France. I mean, I read one study by a feminist academic recently looking at nannies who are recent arrivals from sub-Saharan Africa. But the point is, if you want to get the rebate from the government or the tax credit, it has to be approved. All that means is basically, obviously, your nanny has to be a legal migrant, and most of them are. And secondly, that you pay on top of their salary. It's normal. You pay the so-called social charges, you know, social security, these kinds, and holiday pay, these kinds of things. But even when all of that's factored in, it's still quite reasonable. Look, I understand the feminist debate about that, but what I see in France, for example, if you look at, if you want to talk about the origins of the nannies, the people talk about them, there's nannies who've come from Portugal, or there's nannies who are North African, or nannies from sub-Saharan Africa or elsewhere, or even Asian nannies, Chinese nannies. Basically, most of those social groups, for example, the Portuguese, these women have moved way up the social scale. They're very experienced as child carers. A lot of them have done courses. So they're second generation. But I'm sure there's some exploitation in the first generation, but there's a lot of awareness of that. And, I mean, you're encouraged to work within the system. And most people, the people I knew did, anyway.
So let's come to Bangkok, where you're spending time at the moment. Do you employ a nanny there too?
I certainly do.
And is the picture very different there? Are there some interesting comparisons to be made between France, Bangkok, and then Australia?
Well, I think so. If you look at the position of working women, I was looking at some studies in the last few days, even in Thailand, has one of the highest rates of female representation in executive positions. Women run businesses in Thailand. They're extremely hardworking. I mean, sometimes they do a lot more. They're more influential than men. There's obviously a political leader, like Shinawat, who's a woman. Now, everyone uses some kind of... people even lower down the scale. I mean, even... poorer women, so in order to work, there'll be someone either in their family or a young woman who'll assist them with the care of a child so they can work. So there's no disapproval of having a nanny and even having a live-in nanny. But on the other hand, there's absolutely exploitation. But nannies gravitate obviously towards foreigners in general often because they're likely to... I mean, it's bad. I'm not promoting a situation where there aren't minimum protections for nannies. So that's not good. And it's actually changing in Asia. And Hong Kong led the way with a decent minimum wage for nannies. And there's a debate there even about them getting visas, although that was rejected in order to stay long term as in residency. But in Thailand, basically, there's millions of mainly Burmese migrants actually, and a lot of them with papers, and such as our nanny. Our apartment, she has her own apartment, her own entrance, if we want to get down to the specifics. And it's a big apartment because I'm in an, it's not me. I don't pay the apartment, but my husband has a job here, so that they pay an apartment. It's quite big. I don't want to spend my whole day cleaning it.
No,
so we could
I can
go
imagine.
To a much smaller place. And in fact, at the moment, our nanny has her son staying with us for 2 months. So this for me as a feminist solved a big problem because I do find it difficult that, you know, you feel like you're taking a woman away from her child. So when she asked me if he could come because her mother's gone to Burma.
Okay, so it's one big happy family. But Emma-Kate Simons, can I bring this back to Australia? Because you've been watching the debate here in Australia with considerable interest given this multicultural experience of nannying that you've had in your own parenting. So how do you view the Australian situation and what do you think accounts for the Australian attitude towards childcare in the home? Is it something about our egalitarian spirit, our perhaps less class-driven culture?
Perhaps. I think it's also Australians are, if I've correctly understood it, we think we can do things ourselves. We don't need help. I mean, this is something which is very positive. We don't come from the same culture as our English or British forebears with upstairs, downstairs. We never really had that in Australia, with a servant class in the same on the same kind of level. So I think there's a healthy distaste for that kind of approach or attitude. And yes, we are egalitarian. But on the other hand, I don't like that. Therefore, all the responsibility, the guilt, and falls on women, on mothers generally, or now on egalitarian couples to have to do all of the household work and pickups from school that could presumably be performed by someone else who could be paid for that at a decent rate, and that frees you up to work more and to spend more time with your child and to be less stressed.
So a point here, argument is being made suggesting Australia should be open to relaxing immigration laws so that nannies and indeed aged care workers could perhaps come here from Asian cities like Bangkok and work here as nannies quite explicitly. What do you make of that case?
Well, I mean, I'm personally in favour of generally higher immigration intake anyway, and I think if we didn't just bring in so-called guest workers to do specific tasks when there's a sudden gap in the employment market, but actually had a more immigration, but immigration that included some so-called not unskilled workers. But in fact, nannies are not unskilled. I mean, they can perform courses, and then if they've got experience working with many families, well, for me, that's very professional. I wouldn't want to dismiss that either. So I think I don't see what's the problem with allowing in. I mean, these people who go around the world to work as nannies, they're self-selected, socially mobile, extremely positive people. I mean, they've taken risks and to move. I mean, particularly women from the Philippines, and they're exceptional people in most circumstances. So they're the kind of people that, frankly, you'd want to bring in, but you need to give them a way to. They can't just be brought in as guest workers. They need to be able to then have an option, a go at citizenship a bit later. I think that's fair.
Well, it's a good argument that you make based on your very personal experience. You're heading back to France permanently this year, so it'll be interesting to see what choice you make then. Emma-Kate Simons, can I thank you for joining me on the program?
Thank you, it's a pleasure.
And especially so early, I know, Bangkok time, so
no
special
problem.
Thanks for that. Columnist for the Australian Financial Review, Emma-Kate Simons there. She's currently in Bangkok, but will be returning to France in the next month or so. Love your thoughts on this one. Have you employed a nanny before, here or overseas? What do you make of the public debate about the role of nannies and what sort of enhanced role they could play in families in Australia? And what about the French approach? A 50% tax credit, perhaps? Head to our website, abc.net.au/radionational/lifematters. Leave a comment there or email us directly. There's our listener line too, 02-833-1430 is the number to leave a yarn with us on. Up next, the daughter of an Iranian dissident who knows how to make people laugh.